Yeah, we know this song is very outdated, but hey, we're going to play it anyways. Welcome to the Orlando Soccer Show, folks. My name's Austin David, and we're playing this song that we were going to play back in, what was it, June or July, whenever the World Cup was, when France won. We never got around to it. We forgot about it. We need an intro song for today, and so here we are. So, yeah, as I said, my name's Austin David. We're here, and I say we. I'm in one place, but we've got someone else on the other end who's in another place. He hasn't been on for, well, I think it was the World Cup. Yeah, the last time he was on, it was during the World Cup. Welcome back, Gavin Eubank. Gavin, how you doing?
Much like Will Johnson, they thought I was dead. They thought I was never coming back. And yet here I am. You can't kill me.
Hey, don't disrespect Will like that.
Well, you know.
No, I don't know. I really don't know.
I think so.
Yeah, well.
Many people are saying.
Hashtag sources, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
But it's great to be back. It's like you said, it's been a while. And I missed it somewhat.
I feel like the last, since you dropped covering Orlando City, they became terrible. Is that an accurate time frame?
Well, I won't say it's wrong, but they have always been terrible while I've been covering them. They just happen to be really bad this year.
But they got, well, like, they got worse when you kind of just dropped off the face of the earth, you know?
Yeah, I think it was right around the time they went on that 6-game winning streak, and then it all fell apart when I completely distanced myself from it all.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Good enough time frame.
Yeah.
So, this is kind of a stopgap episode, because, well, we haven't done something in quite a while, and honestly, we needed to just do something. We needed to talk. Gavin wanted to talk, and I wasn't going to stop him. Well, we'll see where this episode goes, and then maybe I'll regret it, but in the end,
I've been talking to myself all week, and might as well just turn the microphone.
I mean, listen, I was doing the exact same thing out in Bradenton, right? So let's start out the show by, like, what happened the last week. So I was out in Bradenton doing the CONCACAF Under 20 Championships for all the national teams. So U.S., Mexico, Canada, St. Kitts and Nevis, Guadeloupe, you name it. From any country in CONCACAF, they sent a U-20 team. Even the U.S. Virgin Islands, who was, I would say, unfortunately the worst team in the tournament. They had a -40 goal differential by the end of it. They were beaten like...
Some would say that's not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were playing like 15-year-olds against like 19- and 20-year-olds, so it was never really going to go over well, but I felt bad for them. I did like 3 games for them, and every time it was like 12-1, 12-0, 11-0, and I'm just like, this is heartbreaking, because you just see the players, and they're like, they know they're going to lose, but like, it's by how many?
I mean, on the bright side, you got to work on your goal calls.
I did. I got to say some goal calls in French when I was calling a bunch of, because Martinique and Guadeloupe and St. Martin, they all have French backgrounds. And, you know, Martinique and Guadeloupe, they play under the French flag in competition. So right. They actually have, like, full-on French citizenship. Funny enough, Raphael Varane, who plays for the French national team, he's actually from Martinique. So,
really?
Yeah. He's from CONCACAF, but, you know, probably better off playing with France. So it was kind of cool being able to work on my French a little bit, you know, un peu en français. And that was...
Parlez-vous français?
No, un peu. A little bit of French. Un petit, yeah, un petit peu.
I don't remember. I took French my freshman year in high school, and I learned a lot, but I don't remember any of it now.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
I immediately went to Spanish my next year, and then I learned even less of that one in 2 years.
Yeah, but at least Spanish is kind of like practical right now.
Yeah, it's very, especially covering Orlando City, it's one of those things I wish I had paid a little bit more attention to.
Yeah.
When it came to post games and practices.
Yeah, well, we always have Mike Gramajo.
That's true. He's our resident Spanish speaker.
Yeah. Translate. Well, now that Rafa's gone.
That's true. Well, what's it? Jackie still speaks fluent Spanish. So.
She does.
So that helps.
We're getting a little inside baseball. Nobody knows what we're talking about anymore.
No. I said, let's start bringing people back on track here.
Back to the U20 championships. I did 20 play-by-play games in 10 days, and I was by myself the entire time. So I basically talked to myself in a microphone from starting about 10 a.m. until about 5 p.m. every single day. So, you know, I'm glad I didn't go insane by doing it. It was fun. It was a good experience. Met a lot of good people. Although, because I was in Tampa Bay area, and I had my Orlando City magnet on the back of my car, I was constantly berated by Rowdies fans to the point where they put Rowdies magnets on my car, which I felt very personally attacked by them doing so. To the fact that I found a few extra Orlando City magnets laying around and started putting them on other people's cars just in spite of them. So one of the guys that he actually works for Tampa, the Rowdies, he's their PA guy, Ryan Sadduck. He was the one who I found out put the magnet on my car. And so I got him back. I have not heard anything from him in regards to the magnet on the back of his car. So I'm almost 100% sure he just hasn't noticed that there's an Orlando City magnet on the back of his car. So I'm just not going to say anything and hope it just keeps going.
It's kind of like that time where I moved Michael's magnets around and just waited to see how long it took for him to notice. I think he noticed immediately. He just didn't say anything because he knew it was me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who else would do it?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was what I was up to these last 10 days or so. In the meantime, while I was still out in Bradenton, the Orlando Seawolves started their season. And despite none of us, as in you and I, not being able to be there, we did have two representatives from the Orlando Soccer Show there. One was Mike Ramajo, who was actually doing coverage for the Orlando Sentinel at the time. But then we also had Brad Newton, who was the PA announcer. And I'm very curious if any of the listeners who were at the game, if any, picked up on that, because that's kind of a fun little tidbit. I really am curious. I have heard like two or three people of what they said. Like I asked, like, oh, you know, how was the PA announcer? And you know, they didn't know who it was, but like, yeah, he was pretty good. So I was curious to see how like what the reviews were for the guy in the on the microphone.
Yeah. Many the people that listen to the show regularly know Brad, and they know the antics and the things that he can get himself into. And sure,
I don't think he pulled off any of his like signature goal calls, though. I think he just kind of went vanilla with it.
Well, it's preseason for everybody. He's still warming the vocal cords up, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be doing any more games after this, though. Because from what I've heard, they're actually getting Dave Ziemba, who was the original PA announcer for Orlando City back in the Citrus Bowl days.
Oh,
yeah. It's literally just getting the family back together. Like, you've got Tom Traxler as head coach. You've got Tyler Turner, Luke Bowden, Johnny Mendoza, and Lewis Neal. You've got CJ Gonsalves. Is it Gonsalves? He was the trainer from like 2014 to 2016 for Orlando City. You know, you've got a bunch of Orlando City old guard that are involved with this project. So,
and I even saw that Kay Rollins and James O'Connor are out there for the game.
Of course.
The whole Orlando soccer community is kind of coming together back to the roots here.
Yeah. And if for folks who listened to the show 2 weeks ago when I interviewed Tyler Turner, that was one of the things he brought up, was like kind of the family atmosphere of the old days, right? You know, with the USL, the one thing he said that the reason they were so successful back in USL was everyone played for each other and they all felt like they were a combined family and they wanted to win for each other, not just for a paycheck. And you could probably easily say that's what's missing for Orlando City now, mainly because, well, they stepped up from minor leagues to major leagues, and that tends to happen with those kind of situations.
Mm-hmm.
But when I talk to a lot of the older guys from USL who have known James O'Connor for a long time, they all believe in him. They all say that he's the kind of person and coach that can bring that mentality back to Orlando and have that locker room atmosphere, that family, the, you know, just everything that was missing, what that's been lacking over the last 3-4 years of Orlando City, to bring it back into the fold and hopefully bring them into the playoffs for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, that's, I don't know if that's necessarily something that's going to make a huge impact on the field. You know, like, in some cases it does, some cases it doesn't. But like you said, that is certainly a big piece of the Orlando City puzzle specifically that has been missing the last few years. And it keeps seemingly getting a little bit further and further away as we see a lot of these faces that have been there from the beginning departing, you know, with the key figures, not just players, but, you know, the Phil Rollinses and the guys in the front office. Yeah, NFL so building club, those guys are all going too.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. It's not just like, so this past offseason, there's been a lot of turnover in the front office.
Yeah.
Right? Not the public figures, but the guys in the background. And it's been kind of incredible. I've been hearing from different people just like how many people that have been there from like 2013, 2014, 2015, they're all moving on and they're picking right now to do it.
And who's the latest to go that just went to Miami?
Oh, Dennis Sprinkle. He's a great guy. UCF grad, Chelsea fan. We know, you know, we got along pretty well. But he was there since 2014. He was around, he started during the Disney year and then moved right up into MLS and everything. And he's gone on to Miami now to start that project up, and he'll manage the HR and be the director of all that, human resources, and he'll be the point guy for basically everyone they hire. And yeah, he did a good job at Orlando City. But not only that, I think the IT guy, BP, Brian Paul, he's just left. A few of the other ticket people. End of last season, Teresa Tatlunghari, who was, you know, she did like, it's hard to describe what Teresa did because she did a lot and she was there since 2011. She was basically the one in charge of like all the jerseys coming out, all the marketing. Well, she was the marketing. She was the person in charge of marketing. That's what I was looking for. She left at the end of last season to go on and do her own thing. So you've just seen the slow trickle of everyone kind of going to do other things. It's easy to speculate saying, oh, well, the club is in tatters. You know, everyone's moving and jumping ship. But, you know, it could just be that the time has come for people to move on. You know, with Phil, he always used to say that he was never going to stay around. He's the kind of person that starts something, lets it grow, and then moves on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like that's a lot of other people's kind of mentalities, where they start something, they do well, they perfect their craft, and then somebody else comes along and says, hey, you're really good at what you do, and they go somewhere else. But that's the nature of the business.
Yeah, these things happen, and it's not specific to Orlando City. It's not specific to soccer in general. You know, people find new opportunities. They want to expand, you know, on their life experiences and go to new places and do new things, and it just happens to be that kind of period right now where the team's going through a little bit of turnover. That happens.
Yeah, especially after a down year, you know, it's kind of to be expected. But the changing of the guard is something that you keep an eye on and say, okay, so what direction are they heading now? Because you could argue, like, the James O'Connor hire for Flavio and Alex, that was their real first hire, because they didn't hire Jason. That was Phil. Jason came in under Phil, and then Phil left. So they were with Jason. So James is really their first guy.
Who brought that coaching search on to begin with? You know, with firing Adrian Heath midway through that campaign. Like, maybe Kreis was Phil's guy, but did Phil necessarily want the coaching change as much as the other guys did?
Well, that can be argued. I think that's definitely some point that you can argue. But the fact is, during the coaching search, it was, from what I've heard from multiple people, that was Phil, his choice for manager. And it wasn't a bad choice at the time. I think that was probably, on paper, if you didn't know what was going to happen over the next 2 years, you would have said that's a home run hire, hiring Jason Kreis to Orlando City.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, he was still one of the best MLS coaches who had a track record of winning.
Mm-hmm.
But hindsight's 20/20. You didn't know then what you do now. And so you say, okay, well, you move on. But then you bring in James O'Connor, and after a half season, everyone's already ready to fire him again. And I think we've talked about this a few, Mike and I have talked about this a few times. It's just, give the guy a season, at least a season, to show what he can do with a roster. I don't understand the need to be so, to have so many knee-jerk reactions, to go so quickly to move coaches around. Like, do you want to be the team that fires six coaches in 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
Right? No coach would want to go there, first of all, because it doesn't sound like there's any job stability. Right? You know, you go through a little down period, and it's like, oh, well, see you later. Bring in the next guy.
And it's not the same thing as a guy like Julian Lopetegui going in and taking over a team like Real Madrid, where you expect to win now. Like,
and then they have a similar roster too from last year,
right? And he's taking over a roster that's, you know, is going to go through another whole rebuild this offseason. Like, what do you honestly expect to happen? Like, yeah, people think you bring in a new coach and things suddenly change, but that's not really the reality of, especially in soccer, when coaches try to play to their specific, you know, preferences and game plans and identities. And this team is not built for what this coach wants to do and is trying to do. It doesn't happen right away. And, you know, we were saying that for 2 years with Jason Kreis, and eventually his thing just didn't work out. And now it's time for a new coach, and they need to give him the time to make his thing and see if that works out.
Yeah. And the thing with James O'Connor is, I think we had a chat about this a while ago, is his time with Louisville and the culture that he created within that team, how they were able to stay together and survive basically his entire staff leaving, a new staff coming in, and then they still go back to back and win championships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, oh yeah, well, it's minor league. Oh yeah, well, it's not the same level of coaching. And, you know, that's fair. But regardless of coaching ability, the mental aspect of the game remains throughout any level of soccer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to manage the mentality of 20 something different players who have different viewpoints on how they want to play, how the team should play, how everything should work, managing those guys and having them on the same page is such a challenge in and of itself. And I don't think people realize that as much as they should, because, you know, people think about it, but mainly they think about the product on the field, not about what's happening in the locker rooms after the games, not about what's going on in training, not about any of the other stuff that happens behind the scenes. I think that kind of gets overlooked comparatively to the product on the field. So, something that Sasha Kljestan said at the last training session of the year kind of stood out to me. He said, this isn't going to be an overnight fix. It's going to take 2 or 3 years to build a culture here. And again, you saw that in Louisville. The first 2-3 years was the building of the culture, but then the culmination of that building was back-to-back championships. So patience paid off for them. But it's a matter of giving a guy like James O'Connor, who hasn't had necessarily a proven track record of professional coaching experience, a chance.
And it's It's almost the same thing as with Adrian Heath here, is before the team came into Major League Soccer, the thing was the club culture and how different that they were compared to the other teams around them. And it's everything like that winning mentality that was there, the defy expectations, that wasn't just built going into an offseason in Major League Soccer. That was built over 4 years of playing in USL, getting there under Adrian Heath and under the leadership of Phil Rollins and all those guys.
Right.
And then it sort of fell apart as people went and people came in and, you know.
Here was the biggest.
Caused certain ruckuses in the locker room and such.
The biggest issue with that is that the whole roster changed from USL to MLS.
Exactly. It was a different mentality starting in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, you had to. Adrian Heath basically had to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He had some of his old guard. He had Kevin Molino. He had Luke Bowden. He had Lewis Neal. You know, and he had a few guys from the 2014 roster, like Tommy Redding, Rafael Ramos. But outside of those guys, everybody else was new. Everybody else came in and had to try and figure out what was going on. And you saw in the very early stages of Orlando City, the cliques that kind of evolved with different players. And, you know, the Spanish-speaking guys are over here. And then you have the the Brazilians over here. And then you have some of the American guys over here. And then you have... you know, different cliques. And that was something that I would say that Adrian Heath probably wasn't accustomed to, because his entire time in Orlando, everyone had that buy-in mentality. They all bought into what was happening because, again, going back to that whole playing for each other thing, right? They all wanted to win for each other because, you know, it wasn't the stakes that it is in MLS, right? When we talked to Jamie Watson a few months back when Minnesota came to Orlando, he was saying how, you know, they got paid peanuts and he had to immediately go working as a server at a restaurant the day after the championship game, right? So it wasn't all for the money. They weren't playing for the money. They were playing for pride. They were playing for each other. And I feel like when you get to a level of professionalism and you know, you get paid $100,000 a year, that kind of tails off, falls by the wayside. And that's the natural progression of things. But that was, I think, where Adrian Heath struggled the most in just terms of accustoming himself. Is that a word? Accustoming? Acclimating himself to that kind of mentality, the bigger mentality, because... And that's my personal opinion. I could be completely wrong about that, but kind of the vibe I got.
I don't really want to make this a whole like dissection of like Adrian Heath's tenure, but like when you think about it, that could be one of the things that might have made his struggles a little bit more relevant, is that, you know, going from coaching those kind of players that you get in lower division soccer to now more top class, top quality players is certainly difficult for a coach. You know, any coach can know the X's and O's of soccer, but like we were saying about James O'Connor and a guy that knows how to command the personalities and command the locker room and get those guys all on board, that's a totally different thing as far as being a head coach in Major League Soccer is. And one reason why Orlando City fans should be more ready to welcome the time is because if you can find a coach like that can do that, you hold on to him and you let him do his thing, because that's more important than anyone that can just, you know, write on a chalkboard and write up on a board and say, hey, do this, do that, do this. It's about the connections and the group as a whole rather than the individual player and what they're doing on the field. And he's built that in Louisville, and it is shown, like you said, with two straight championships, which is in a big league like the USL is now, is not an easy thing to do in 2018.
It's very true. But again, time will tell if James O'Connor can adjust and acclimate to that mentality of being kind of going from a USL to MLS. And I think that's what the criticism has come from. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, he's a minor league coach coming in and he's, you know, over his head and whatever. But time will tell. Time will tell. And again, I mean, everyone I talked to, going back to Lewis Neal, last week when I played the interview that we had with Lewis Neal, he played with James O'Connor back in Stoke. So he never played with him back in Orlando. Literally, when Lewis was going to D.C., James was coming into Orlando. So they never actually played in Orlando, but they have 5 years of history playing in Stoke. And even back then, Lewis Neal was said like, he's going to be a coach. He was already a coach in his like 20s. He felt like just another coach on the field, and that he was demanding, and he was not just like some other player. He was just commanded that kind of respect from players. And coming from as a player, when he came to Orlando City, it was so similar, because I talked to Adrian Heath and Luke Bowden, similar kind of mentalities. Like, it was just another coach that Adrian Heath could kind of put on the field, and he would be able to man the midfield and, you know, make adjustments on the fly. And so he has.
He was a player coach for that team, wasn't he?
In 2014, before he moved to Louisville, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was technically in 2012 and 2013, just not in title. Although I could go back and maybe he was. Either way, he basically was those 3 years that he was there, well, 2.5. And so having all these accolades of going back to when he was in England, coming to Orlando, and now going to Louisville, having all that background of coaching history, that helps, right? Because, like, people would argue Adrian Heath, like, when he came over, you know, you look at his resume before coming to Orlando, and he was the caretaker of a job. Then he was over in Austin when Phil called him, and then he came to Orlando and, you know, found success early. And we're going to see in Minnesota what'll happen if Adrian Heath gets an actual 2-3 years under his belt, right? He had 2 years now. This will be in his third. And the GM has already said, we believe in Adrian Heath 100%. So we'll see if somehow things turn around in Minnesota and they become good and they make the playoffs before Orlando City, then you can say, well, he got his 3 years and look what he's able to do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, this all goes back to that whole point of time will tell if or if not things will go the way we talk about them going. So,
and just to correct myself, it was Anthony Pulis who was the player coach that I was thinking of for those years.
Okay. Yeah. And he was another guy who was kind of just a natural progression of coaching. You could just kind of understand. Well, again, the pedigree also coming from Tony Pulis to Anthony Pulis, like, you knew kind of like that was where he was going to be going. And you see it, you know, with St. Louis in their first year, first ever playoff berth.
Yeah.
Not bad.
And it was one of those interesting little things, like when Ant and when James O'Connor just kind of got out into the coaching role, it was like these two guys were basically seeds planted under Adrian Heath and how they would branch out. Now, obviously, Adrian's kind of struggled in Major League Soccer so far, but
yeah, but like,
as far as we could tell, these other two guys are flourishing, and that might not necessarily be because of Adrian Heath, but it was still one of those fun little storylines.
Yeah, the coaching tree of Adrian Heath is kind of wild, because you have Rob Valentino now, who's an assistant with Atlanta United too. You have James O'Connor now with Orlando City. You have Anthony Pulis with St. Louis. I'm trying to think who else came from his coaching tree. Bobby Murphy is another Adrian Heath coaching tree product.
It's true. And there's also your Danny Alvarez as a youth coach in the academy.
Yeah. A lot of former players for Orlando City are now youth academy coaches.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to look back on all of that and say the what ifs, or, you know, if this or that, but let's look forward. We'll talk a little bit about what's going to go happen with this team once the final roster moves are dropped, because let's face it, we don't know what this team's going to look like next year. We'll get a better look at what it might look like when certain players' contracts aren't renewed and or trades happen. But it's a guessing game to this point. Most of the guys are under contract for next year. You probably have about maybe 70% of the roster staying, unless they make some moves to move other players.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting offseason. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of moving pieces in and out, and, you know, it might be one of those things where we don't see a lot of it happening until the late December, January window opens up like we did last year, but they got a lot of work to do, that's for sure. And, you know, like you're saying, that Sasha Kljestan was quoted as, it's not all going to happen this offseason, so if you don't see a ton, don't be surprised that, you know, the roster is not completely overbuilt from top to bottom in the next 3 months.
Yeah. We will see when the time comes. But let's talk about other stuff. You know, we can...
Good soccer teams.
Talk about some what? Good soccer teams? Well, before we move on from Orlando City, I do want to kind of bring up the new training facility. Because that's fun.
Yeah.
So...
New drive, too.
So it's going to be in Kissimmee. Mm-hmm. Right, you're familiar with this facility, aren't you, Gavin?
Yeah, I actually played a couple of travel baseball games. It was, I want to say around 2013, maybe. It was our last tournament of the season. I hated playing for that team so much. I was so excited that that weekend was finally here because I was able to play the last few games and be done with it. And we played, I think it was two or three games at that training facility, which was. It used to be the spring training home of the Houston Astros, and mm-hmm. then they just recently moved out to, I think it was West Palm Beach or Vero Beach or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Vero sounds about right.
But they're no longer there, and I guess they're doing, I don't know what Orlando's doing. I don't remember what the things look like, but we're going to put some
four
fields.
The building is actually already there. The main building of the training facility, it's already there. They're just going to remodel it a little bit and then build four fields around it.
Okay.
So, like, most of the work is actually already done. Which brings me to the point of, like, what happened to Lake Nona? And I've asked, you know, myself and a few other media members have asked the club, and we haven't really gotten, like, a full-on answer that we can kind of expound upon. So, you know, now we can just kind of wildly speculate. Right?
I would guess money. I mean, like, I remember talking, I did an interview with Phil Rollins. I believe it was near the end of, I want to say it was near
2016.
Somewhere in the 2016 season, maybe. Yep. And I asked him about it, and he said that it was on hold because of, this was while the stadium was still being built.
Yep.
So the team was not trying to throw a bunch of money into that, which was, if you remember, I think it was, the stadium was still being used like with public funds before.
Yes.
When the training facility was announced.
Not only that, but they started up Orlando City B and the Orlando Pride.
Right.
The same year.
So all these things were happening. And then they decided to privately finance the stadium. A lot of their money had to go into that. So things got redirected and they weren't going to, you know, throw money at this and while they're tied up into that and then have to worry about the training facility and, you know, mm-hmm. cost for that. And my guess is that eventually they just did not have the money for it because this seems like a much cheaper option.
So one of the questions that was asked the club was that, did Orlando City own the land in Lake Nona, or was it a government-owned land that they were allowing Orlando City to build on? Because that changes the complexity of the thing, right? If they own the land and Kissimmee came out and said, hey, we've got this land for you if you want it. And it was cheaper because Lake Nona's stuff is in the path of progress. It's possible they could have sold the land to get money to finance the new training facility in Kissimmee. And again, that's the completely wild speculation. But I know a lot of people were curious because at the All-Star announcement, the city commissioner for Kissimmee was on stage and he spoke. People were wondering, what the hell does he have to do with Orlando City? Now's your answer.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I didn't know he was there.
Yeah, and he had like a whole speech about the what Orlando City was doing. And funny enough, I've actually kind of like half known about this training facility for a little while, just through different sources and such. But I was curious as to, one, if it was actually going to happen, if they were going to announce it. And then two, what they were going to do with Legnona, and I still don't know about that.
My thing is, I'm trying to think. I wasn't the whole part of the Legnona. It was part of a development that kind of coincided with the U.S. Tennis Association.
Yep.
Building something too.
Yep. And well, the U.S. Tennis Association is all built. It's all out there already.
Right. So I'm trying to think if that was part of it when you say
maybe the USTA wanted to expand a little bit more, and they wanted more land, and Orlando City was more than happy to sell them the land. Or again, wild speculation. Don't know. But once I know, then we can do a whole story on it and everything. But
yeah,
that's for another day. But this is the thing. This training facility has been put off how many times over the last 4 years?
Too many.
Well, four times every year, once every year. It's basically, and I remember Alex Leitao in the beginning of the season at the introductory press conference, he came out and said the training facility will be built this year.
It's more interesting too, is originally the Pride weren't supposed to be housed part of this facility.
Right. Well, because when they announced the facility, the Pride didn't exist.
Well, they didn't. But then the plan was to continue to have the Pride even after they came in. People asked about it. They said that the Pride were going to stay at
Sylvan. Yeah.
Lake Sol. Yeah.
They were just going to move into where Orlando City's MLS team was.
Right. Which, if I had to guess, it's probably more cost effective to not own two separate training facilities when you can just house them together.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the unique things about this new training facility. I don't know. I'm not sure. Do the other MLS NWSL owned teams that coincide together, do they train in the same facilities?
I'm not honestly not sure. That's a good question though.
That's something to look up for another day. But it's interesting to think about, because you've got the Utah Royals and RSL now.
I would think so, because they did just build a brand new $70 million training facility.
Right, but I don't know if they built that with the Royals in mind, because they built it for their academy and their main team, and then they just
have it planned way ahead.
Right. So that's kind of the curiosity that I have, is if they are over there and everything, but I feel like they probably are. They probably kind of adjusted things. But then you've got the Seattle Reign. Are they owned by the Seattle team?
No.
The Portland Thorns. The Portland Thorns are. I don't know. I would assume that they probably train there too. Okay. I don't know. I'm excited to see if this actually happens, and then what it looks like at the end of it. I'm not excited for the long drive that I will have to make every week to go see training. That's going to be a pain.
Yeah. That makes it worse for me, as training was an hour away from where I lived, and then
now it's going to be 3 hours.
Yeah, it's going to be impossible to get out there now.
Yeah, you'd literally be better off flying.
Yeah.
For the amount of money you pay in gas, you might just charter a plane for
Yeah, exactly. It'd be a lot easier. I need to win the lottery so I can just get my own little biplane and then just
or just buy the team. By the team.
That too. Yeah. That'd be a lot easier, and I can just move them to Jacksonville.
There you go. Simpler. No, yeah. don't move it to Jacksonville. Don't do that to people of Jacksonville.
I think the people of Jacksonville would like it. There's a lot of soccer fans up here.
How's the Armada doing?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah. A lot of soccer fans. How's the one team in Jacksonville doing? Oh, I don't know.
I do know that they have a team store at the St. John's Town Center. I have been there, and I bought a t-shirt. So I am supporting the Armada up here.
They're fourth division currently, by the way.
That's through no fault of their own. The NASL plunged. So
they could have joined USL. Could have. Didn't.
They could have.
Yeah. Well, that's on them. That's completely on them. Hey, so let's talk about some other stuff. Before we move on from Orlando City as a whole, I want to bring up the Kyle Larin saga again. That thing will never go away. Kyle Larin will never go away. There's a random rumor coming from Turkey that he is unhappy with his situation, which, again, go figure with that one. But then there was a rumor that he would go back to Orlando City. First off, I have a hard time believing this, mainly because of how he left the team and then how the team responded to him leaving. That was kind of a, what's the best way to put it? A shit show. That's probably the best way of putting it. On both ends of things. It just was not handled well. But then the fact that, like, Turkish media is like, oh yeah, he'll go back to Orlando. I don't know. I don't know if they'd take him back. I don't know if he'd be welcomed back by the fans. I don't know if the club would forgive everything that he did. I don't know if he'd forgive everything the club did. I don't see that happening at all.
No. There's no way. I mean, like, the only way to connect him to Orlando is the fact that he played in Orlando, and that's and the only way that I can see it.
He does like Orlando. I know he does like Orlando.
Yeah. But when you have the CEO tweeting out things about players disrespecting the club and then bringing in a new number nine and calling him a number nine of respect, I don't know, as long as that current CEO isn't here, that player is coming back.
Again, that goes back to the whole mishandled situation thing on both sides, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, crazier things have happened. Don't get me wrong. Like,
listen, if that happened,
Alex Rodriguez and the Yankees, and I never thought he'd play another game with them again, and they welcomed him back. So you never know.
Yeah. Listen, if for some reason Kyle Aaron comes back and signs like a designated player deal with Orlando City, I'll have to think of something insanely crazy to do as like
eat your own hat.
Eat my own hat?
Yeah.
No, I'd probably like go. I was going to say run naked through Paramore, but I feel like that would be very dangerous.
Yeah, that's not a smart idea.
I'll figure something out. If it happens, then I'll figure something out. But just know I will do something crazy. You'll because I'm very
dress up like a swan and go swimming in Lake Eola.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that. I'll dress up as a swan and go swimming in Lake Eola if Kyle Aaron comes back to Orlando City.
You heard it here first, folks. Pin this podcast at whatever minute marker this is.
I don't know if that's how it works. You can't pin podcasts. You can just kind of like scribble down the time that it happened and like make reference to it later. Yeah, it's not a tweet. It's not a tweet. All right, let's move on to other soccer now, right? We talked about Louisville winning the USL championship a little bit. Didier Drogba originally, he announced his retirement and then posted a clip from Wolf of Wall Street saying, I ain't fucking leaving. And that was just another adding to his legend. So I'm hoping that he comes back for another year or two. He's going to be 41 next year, but he's still got it. Like, he's still dominating. And it's second division soccer now in the U.S. So I feel like he could probably hang around there for another year or two. Plus, he owns the team that he plays for.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about some of the most underrated players in the United States right now because of the fact that he's playing in Arizona in a second division team. He's not getting a lot of media coverage, but he is still a treasure for us to have at this point for as long as he continues.
Oh, listen, he still gets a lot of media coverage because he still bangs in goals. Oh, yeah. Have you seen some of the shots and like the goals that he's had this year?
I saw a couple of them on, I know, SportsCenter.
Yeah, he hit there was a free kick he had from about 40 yards out, and he hit a frozen rope into the top corner of the net. And I was just sitting there like, damn, he's still doing this at 40 years old.
He even went for a bicycle in the last minutes of that championship.
Yeah, he did. See, again, like, there's no reason he should think about retiring right now unless he blows it. Well, no, I'm not even going to say it. I didn't say it. I pulled it back. I reeled it in. But I, as a Chelsea fan who's grown up watching Didier Drogba play, being able to meet him when Montreal came to Orlando, he's just a special player, and it's just really cool to see him still playing and playing in the U.S. at that.
Yeah,
not out in like Turkey, where basically there's no media coverage at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Where like, think about this. Like
the Martins are.
Yeah, in China, like all those guys. Do you ever hear of anything they ever do?
No.
No. Like, basically, all of their stuff goes viral in China, but then it never reaches here. Meanwhile,
yeah, how many people even know that Iniesta is currently in China?
Right. Is he in China or Japan?
I'm pretty sure he's in China.
Or no. Didn't he go somewhere else? Somebody went somewhere weird.
Who went to Turkey for a while? Wasn't it Van Persie?
Yeah. I think he's still over there.
Is he?
I don't know. Yeah, no. Iniesta's in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
Yes.
I didn't even know. Really? Yeah.
I just looked him up. He's playing for, what's it called? Vissel Kobe? Yeah, Vissel Kobe. And then Van Persie.
Apparently he's back in the Dutch league.
He's playing for Feyenoord.
Yeah, he's in the Eredivisie now.
Yeah, but he's getting up there too. He's 35.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've heard from him. Kind of fell off the map after he went to
But again, I feel like if you go, Dutch football, not some of the bigger leagues, right? You hear a lot over here, and this is a good transition to a new conversation here. Let's talk about kind of the world's leagues, because you have the broadcasting rights for the big leagues here in the U.S., right? ESPN holds Serie A in Italy. You have BN that holds...
Plus, a ton of leagues now, too, and they have a bunch of... they even have... I'm pretty sure they have the Dutch league, too, as you can watch that.
Do they? But that requires an ESPN Plus, right?
Yeah, ESPN Plus. I mean, it's $5 a month, and...
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff with it.
I need to get that. Anyways, so ESPN has that and a bunch of other leagues. Then you have Fox that has the Bundesliga. You have BN that holds La Liga. Then you have NBC that holds the Premier League. And then a combination of ESPN, Univision, and Fox that own MLS. So that gets a lot of distribution. All those leagues get so much distribution over here. And you hear so much of those leagues because of those television rights. All the highlight packages are available over here from those different Twitter accounts or Facebook pages because they have the right to broadcast them. And they're able to be shared all over the place with different people in America. But you don't have anything like that for Japanese or Chinese soccer. Right?
At least not yet.
Well, but the only time you ever see highlights from Japan or China is from, like, some grainy footage from some random dude on Twitter.
Yeah.
Right? And that's if you see it. Because sometimes it just kind of falls by the wayside because there's other stuff going on. Like, say Hulk scored 4 goals in China. But then, say, like, Eden Hazard scored a brace for Chelsea. Which one do you think would get more play in America? The 4 goals from Hulk, including a bicycle kick maybe, or just a normal brace from Eden Hazard?
Well, if Hulk scores a bicycle kick, I think that'll find its way into mainstream pretty quickly somehow.
Really? Did you hear about the what was it? Did you hear about the goal that Oscar scored about 3 months ago where he hit a bicycle kick from the top of the 18?
It might have been retweeted into my timeline. Yeah, I think.
No, it didn't.
People tend to spread very quickly because all of soccer world sees it and just blows up on it.
Gavin, no, it didn't because it didn't exist. I made that up.
No,
that was trying to prove my point.
Did something at some point, though. Somebody did something.
Okay, you're just you're grasping at straws at this point. But my point is that I'm trying to make is that. All of the television rights held by the big companies here in America help the growth of soccer in the big leagues, right? The biggest of the big leagues and the biggest of the big stars. The reason that Serie A was picked up by ESPN in the first place was because of Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't know if really anyone can argue the fact that that happened because it was so quick after that Ronaldo announced that he was going to Italy, they picked it up like immediately. And it was just sitting there kind of waiting for someone to pick it up. And so now you have all those big leagues being shown in America, but not the smaller leagues. What would you consider a smaller league? Like any league in South America, any league farther east in Europe from Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Switzerland, the Swiss, and the Dutch leagues, and things like that. Maybe like the Irish Premier League, whatever their league is.
Yeah, the SPFL.
Yeah.
But again, like the main reason of some of the people that hear about these leagues is through FIFA playing video games, right? They'll open up like packs for Ultimate Team and see a player from, the Scottish Premier League, and they say, oh, so that's where that guy is, you know? And now that they've added the Chinese league into the game, and you have a lot of those players coming back into the game and into the fold of the video game, people are like, oh, so that's where that guy went, or oh, so he's playing over in this team, right? I personally am incredibly happy that Orlando City's former striker, great Long Tan, is in the game again. I mean, who doesn't love Long Tan? Right?
Big comeback here.
Yeah. He's actually, funny enough, he's actually, I think, rated higher than Dom Dwyer.
Yeah, I think I saw you post that either on Twitter or it was in our group chat.
I just posted a picture of his card, but I think Dom is like a 70. I want to say he's like a 72 or 74. Or 73. And then Long Tan's a 73 as well.
Yeah, I think 74 would put you into a gold.
No, 75 is gold.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's definitely not a 74 then.
No, Dom is a 73 in FIFA 18. And in FIFA 19, he's a 72. So he dipped. And then Long Tan, he's a 71. Okay, so he's very close. Very close to that fact, but still interesting. Just to look at the teams from the other countries and say, well, you know, why not get a little bit more play over here? But there's only so much soccer to go around, you know. MLS, I would say MLS is trying to dominate the market over here, mainly because they are over here, and you know,
yeah, I mean, ratings are slowly going up, and it's. Certainly going to be another big talking point of the playoffs, and I think that it helps that we have some pretty good matchups coming up. So,
well, speaking of the playoffs and talking points, let's transition into the MLS playoffs. Great transition, Gavin. Well done. I know you're a bit rusty, but I mean, yeah, well done with that one. So, did you watch any of the playoff games to this point?
I did. I got to see. I caught up on most of the game on Thursday with Portland and Seattle.
That was fun.
Majority of the Atlanta game, and I watched all of the New York Columbus game.
So I was working, I think, during the Saturday playoff games, or I was driving back, one or the other. But I was able to catch the Cascadia Cup rematch, which was really fun. Going to penalties, that would probably go down as one of the best of that rivalry in recent memory.
As far as just pure drama goes, especially at the end with the Timbers not knowing that.
Oh my god, that they didn't. They thought they won. Oh, that was wild. They were celebrating on the field. They were like pointing to the heavens and crying, and then they have to be told, "Wait, no, you're going to penalties." Can you? I imagine, and the fact that the Timbers won after that, and like the guys that were celebrating ended up converting their penalties in the first place, like. Yeah. That's such a range of emotion, the up and down. To compose yourself and to have to step up and like take a shot. It I can't even imagine what's going through their heads at the time.
Yeah, I mean that's an up and down game. That's certainly something that as a player you want to be a part of.
Yeah. And not only that, but they were in Seattle. They were playing in Seattle, like. God, that's such a mind trip.
I think even Stefan Fry after the game, who was the losing goalkeeper, by the way, said, like, what a game. Like, that was awesome. Like, even just to be a part of.
Yeah, at some point, like, you've gone through so much in that game. You kind of just have to take a step back and appreciate it for what it was and say, wow, I was a part of something really special here.
Exactly.
I don't know if the fans really saw it that way at the time, especially the ones there. They were probably heartbroken that they were, you know, not going to a MLS Cup championship for a third year in a row, which is, again, that would have been insane if they had been able to pull that off.
Yeah,
but
right.
They were, you know, again, making the playoffs and getting to that point three straight years after, you know, changing coaches as well. It's pretty impressive. We'll say that. Yeah, it's been fun just watching the MLS Cup playoffs. They're taking a little bit of a break. I understand why they're doing it because of international stuff. But, like, just get it over with. Like, just play it every week and then get it done before, you know, like, you have to play the MLS Cup final in the middle of a snowstorm in, like, early December.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, it drags out so long. And then you think about the fact that the teams that are in the MLS Cup final, essentially a month and a half later, they're back on the field in preseason. When teams that don't make it have an extra month and a half of offseason to rest and, you know, kind of rebuild up for the next year.
Right. So when was the last playoff game? Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, the Red Bulls.
Okay.
Game.
So it's a full 2 weeks until the next game, 25th. So not next Sunday, but the Sunday after. That's when they start the conference championships.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play the second leg on a Thursday.
Yeah, that schedule could not be more bunched up. And like I guess I get trying to move it together, but then the MLS Cup's not until what, the 9th on a Sunday? So
the 8th.
Like almost
it's
week
on
and a half later.
It's on a Saturday, which is not going it's not going to coincide with NFL football, which is good.
Yeah,
so they won't have to like fight for that viewership, but they'll have to beat college football out right when it comes down to like conference championships and bowl game time. So that might be a bit rough. But if they're lucky, there won't be any good games going on at the time. It's at 8. Yeah. They're doing an 8 o'clock kick on, and it's on Fox.
Can I just say, like, I don't know about you, but I am so excited for this Red Bulls Atlanta series. Like, these are
the two best teams in the league.
Two of the best teams that Major League Soccer has had, with just some of the best players out there. And they are two teams that have their identities and do them so well. Both of them are just so good coach teams that regardless of what happens, it's going to be a good series. I think the Red Bulls, you know, like everyone talks about Atlanta and, you know, Tata and Almiron and Yosef and just all the hype that there is there. But the Red Bulls are like, you know, they're for a Supporters Shield winner. They obviously get the coverage that they deserve, but I feel like they don't get enough for what they should be getting, because this team is just so good. And it, you know, credit obviously goes all the way back to Jesse Marsh, who was the coach at the beginning of the year, to get them where they were. I don't know. This could be the year that they finally do it.
You just did. Good job, Gavin. We'll come back to this, just like you'll come back to whatever I said about Kyle Aaron coming back. We'll come back to this if the Red Bulls blow it.
I don't think so. I think that this team is good, and the first game's going to be in Atlanta. So, I mean, realistically, the last time they went to Atlanta, they beat them. So it's not unexpected. It wouldn't be unexected to see them go in there and get a really favorable result. And then you come back home where they just dominated the crew.
Yeah.
In what could possibly be Greg Berhalter, what many people think is Greg Berhalter's last game before he takes over for the United States.
That's right. When do you think that announcement's going to come?
I'm surprised it didn't come this morning.
that would have been a bit too soon.
I don't know. If it does come, I think they might wait until after these friendlies just to let, you know, the team kind of go distraction free, let Dave Sarakin coach out the two games, and then Berhalter takes over day one after Italy.
Hmm. Or maybe he flies out to England.
Yeah.
You know, they overshadow Wayne Rooney's testimonial and bring out a new coach. They like dim the lights and now announcing the USA's new head coach. And Wayne Rooney's just standing on the side like, what the hell?
Or you give Dave Sarokin his testimonial on top of it and we'll see who gets the bigger spotlight.
Someone just hijacks the booth at Wembley Field and like takes over. And it's like, so instead of doing this whole thing for Wayne Rooney, we're doing a testimonial for U.S. manager, interim manager, yeah, Dave Sarokin.
It's like for his final game tonight at Wembley, and everyone's going crazy for Rooney. And it's like, Dave Sarokin. And the crowd just like, what?
Who the hell is that guy?
Yeah.
Sorry. Who the bloody hell is that guy?
Yeah, exactly. And they're all throwing their pints of beer on them.
No. No beer allowed into the stadium.
Oh, is that a Wembley thing?
No, that's an English football thing.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to drink your beer outside in like the concourse.
Where's the fun in that?
So people don't throw beer, you know.
Oh, but I can eat a meat pie in my seat. That'd probably do even more damage if I threw it at someone.
I mean, it's hot, but it's also like you don't want to waste food.
I mean, you wouldn't waste beer either if you were a smart Englishman.
Yeah, well, you're giving them too much credit, Gavin.
I guess I am.
Anyways.
Yeah.
All right, last thing I want to talk about, because we're over an hour, and we got just kind of been talking, which has been fun. Rant. Yeah, no, it's been good, though. It's been a good kind of rant. FC Cincinnati announced their new crest change in jersey. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. It's just very underwhelming.
It's just becoming, like, at this point, why do we even let new teams name themselves and create their own brand identity? Because it's just getting so bland that it's not even, like, unique anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody's an FC. Everybody's got just a basic-ass logo.
Right, but it's so much more it's so much more basic than the old one.
Oh, yeah. It's worse. They downgraded.
Yeah, I think someone told me, like, it looked like somebody used, like, generic font on Microsoft Word to put it together.
Yeah, the little Food Lion logo on there.
Yeah, that's been the kind of thing that's been going around.
Did you see the explainer for it, like, that broke down the crest?
No.
So they have in there, the middle is Cincinnati slanted upwards, and it says Cincinnati slanted upwards because it's a city on the rise. I'm like,
oh my
really?
Dear God.
Cincinnati, Ohio, really a city on the rise. Now we're just really getting dumb with it.
Man, listen, every team has done something dumb like that before. I remember at Orlando City's jersey reveal, and they did something similar to that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but like, I think...
Yeah, they did it with the jersey. I was actually just looking at something that you tweeted out a few weeks ago from the jersey reveal, and you had the picture.
Yes.
With the explainer on it that detailed every little thing on the crest or on the jersey.
Yeah, so here you've got the Jacquard engineered branding, or the banding. So like the little like bands going around the front, and it says on the front representing the transition to a new era.
Yeah,
you've got.
Is this for Orlando?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because Cincinnati's was so dumb. They have the lion. He's wearing a little crown that has three spikes, and it's three spikes for every year of our existence. 3 years. That's really enough to honor.
I mean, Orlando City did the 21 like little flames for a lion for being the 21st MLS team. Everyone has their little thing. You can't really judge Cincinnati for having their little thing. At least they have history to kind of recall back to, you know? Because Orlando City had 4 years of history before they joined MLS.
Right, but they didn't pay homage to their four seasons of being in existence.
Well, they had the damn USL logo inside the jersey.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool. It was close to the is USL inside the jersey on the hearts to represent Orlando at home.
See, there you go, going to the represents thing. Everybody does it. Everybody does it, though.
2015 very well. And they also did on the crest, they pointed out FC. It said modern/German heritage or something like that.
Yeah, because of Fußball Club.
Yeah.
It's actually Football Club Cincinnati, not Fußball Club.
Yeah. It's FC Cincinnati, yeah.
So it's Because a lot of people thought it was going to be Fußball Club because of the German heritage, but they ended up just going with Football Club and just staying really bland and generic again.
Yeah, good old Cincinnati. So we'll see what happens. I think they'll just be another Atlanta, at least for the first few years. I don't know about you and your expectations, but...
What, for Cincinnati?
Yeah.
I mean, they got a nice little base, right? They've got a few MLS players who've played in USL this season, right? Fernando Adi, Fatai Alashe. They've got a little bit of a base with that, and they've already had them play with the team that they're, you know, most of them, I think, won't make it to MLS, but I think a few of them, you know,
I think they said they're bringing over at least three, maybe four to five.
I could see at least six coming over, not including Adi and Alashe. They had a really good roster, right? You know, they're what's his name? He was named Defender of the Year.
That's a good call. USL Defender of the Year?
Yeah.
Forrest Lasso.
Yeah, Forrest Lasso. Thank you. He was very good. And they've got a lot of other guys. They got like Jimmy McLaughlin, right? He was a player who came out of the Philadelphia Union system, couldn't make it in MLS, went to Cincinnati, and has been fantastic for them ever since. He is definitely a caliber kind of player that you can bring from USL up to MLS and say, okay, you get a shot. You know, this is your way back. This is your opportunity to make it back into the league. And, you know, when he was young, he was with Philadelphia trying to find his way. And now he's a little bit older. So you see, you know, what he'll be able to do. I am interested to see who they end up taking in the expansion draft.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be more of who's going to be protected, because now one of the interesting wrinkles this year was that teams that had a player taken from them last season are excluded this year, except for LAFC. So what is it? I think it's 16. Portland, Sporting Kansas City, I think San Jose maybe. And I don't remember the other two teams, but there are two other teams that are excluded. Obviously, Orlando's not one of them.
Who wants any players from Orlando, though?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's
see who's going to be exposed, but then at the same time, that exposed list is probably not going to be very tasty to pick from. So we'll see.
Expose like Kleschen and Dwyer. See what happens.
I'm sure they'll expose Will Johnson just to see if that happens and if Cincinnati's crazy enough, which I highly doubt it.
No. Here's a low key pick that I kind of want to see happen. Mitch Hildebrand going back to Cincinnati after leaving there and being called up for Atlanta. I kind of just want to see them pick him back up and be like, welcome home. Because he's I'd say he's definitely an MLS caliber keeper.
That's one of those things that kind of makes sense on paper, is if you're going to bring a guy into your club, why not bring in a guy that knows the club?
And the fans and love.
So that's a pretty good one, honestly. I think I would imagine he's going to be unprotected.
Well, as of right now, he's a third stringer.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Atlanta doesn't really have a reason to try to grasp onto him unless they think that they don't want to lose him and they know that Cincinnati might take him. But
no, I think they're probably going to leave him. Mikey Ambrose is also may be available.
I'm sure Harrison Heath might be available at some point.
Could you imagine that conversation in Minnesota? Like, hey, we got to protect a bunch of our players. Who do you think we should leave available? And Adrian is like, I guess I got to go tell Harrison that he's available.
Yeah, right.
Then have a nice sit-down conversation with him and Kalen and be like, hey, it's a small chance, but you may not be here next year.
Yeah, son, I know I traded you once, but...
No, he didn't trade him.
Was that after 2016?
Yeah, because that's when Atlanta came into the league.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Jason had no reason to keep him.
Yeah, right. That's funny.
I still can't believe that him and Kalen had a kid.
Yeah, how's that going? I think I'm still blocked on Twitter.
Yeah, I never interacted with her on Twitter, and I still got blocked somehow. I got unblocked, but like I don't know what happened. She just like went on a blocking spree and blocked about like a few thousand people. Like anyone that's ever tweeted about her, like when she first had the kid, she tweeted something about like how she wanted to keep her child away from like the bad environment of social media, which I mean, fair, because social media is a very horrible place to be. So mm-hmm. I get that. But then she just like instead of just like locking her account or something, or like, you know, kind of turning it off, she just kind of blocked people.
Yeah, it's the easiest way to get rid of people, I guess.
It's a time consuming thing, though, because instead of just locking your account and not allowing people to see your stuff, you have to physically go individually and block people.
Right. And
unless you just throw it into like a like an automatic.
Mad about her.
Yeah.
That's what still gets me. And then she blocked the mainland account, and then Michael threw me under the bus, and she went and blocked my account for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you were at fault there. It was totally your fault.
Well, she shouldn't have had a bad game.
Cool.
Or a poor game, and I probably described it.
Cool. Okay, yeah. Well, I guess that's going to be the way to end this one.
Yeah, it seems like a fair
yeah, talking about Kaylin Kyle and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into the Orlando Pride and Orlando City in the postseason show when everything is all said and done, when the players are released. Because, again, the only real news for the Pride is that they don't have a coach right now. And we had that whole hour interview with Tom a few weeks ago. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And he kind of hinted in that, like, oh, you know, I've got something in the works. And
what do you think the timetable is for finding a new Pride coach?
I really don't know. You got to do it before the draft, at the least.
Yeah.
Which is in January.
A couple months.
Yeah, you've got a month and a half, right? Draft is January 10th, I believe.
Who's on the top of your list?
I wouldn't even know where to start. Pia Sundhage, former U.S. Women's National. Just keep the former U.S. coaches going. You go from Tom Stramani.
Still with, right?
Yeah, but she's coaching like their U18s or something.
I don't know that she would leave. She's only coaching the U18s?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, she'd leave that. Give her a good offer.
Pia Sundhage.
You're looking her up now. I did ask Tiffany Roberts-Zahedek, you know, the UCF coach, because she's a former U.S. Yeah. Women's National Team player, if she was interested. She kind of... She didn't say no, but she basically said, I hope whoever they hire is a friend of mine so I can kind of hang out with them and send my players their way.
Yeah, that would have been my top guess, is if she's just kind of bluffing on that.
She also just signed a new contract extension, so Orlando would have to pay out to buy her out and then sign her to a new contract, which just seems very non what they would want to do.
Right.
So. All right. You done?
That's all I got.
Good. All right. Well, that's an hour and 15 of rambling. We haven't done an episode like this in quite a while.
Yeah.
Or just an episode in general. Well, hey, so hopefully you enjoyed our ramblings. We'll be back next week or the week after. We've got some special stuff going in the works. We've kind of hinted at it over the first like few months, or the last few months, I guess. It's very close to coming about, but I mean we'll just kind of wait until it happens to officially announce it. But teaser. All right. Well, oh, yeah. Gavin, thanks for coming back.
Glad to be back.
At least we could get you back. Yeah, we could get you back from the dead, unlike Brent.
Yeah, we're still trying to rummage through some hurricane wreckage, and hopefully we will one of these days find Brent.
Yeah, well, he's getting married, so we may not find him for a while.
Oh, really?
Wait, you didn't know?
I didn't see anything about it.
Jeez, you have been gone for a while. All right, with that, we're going to end it. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Orlando Soccer Show. You can follow us on Twitter at ORL Soccer Show. You can follow Gavin Eubank on Twitter at Gavin Eubank. He got his old account back after lying about his birthday and then somehow deciding, oh, let's change it. Good job, Gavin.
It's time to get real.
Yeah.
They finally let me change it, and then it,
and then you
me.
They you block they blocked you out for how many months? 3, 4?
I was blocked out at the end of July, so about 4 months. Finally, after I sent them in my mother's driver's license with her birth date on it to make them believe that she ran the account, they unlocked it.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, now you just put that out there in the open. Maybe they listen to this podcast and they block you again. Yeah.
Nazis are running all over the place, but I was under 13 when I made my Twitter account back in almost 10 years ago.
Well, so children shouldn't be on Twitter. We all know this.
I was just tweeting about the Yankees.
No 13-year-old should be tweeting about something so heinous.
I think one of my first tweets was like a response to ESPN about A-Rod.
That sounds like a 13-year-old Gavin thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, for 13-year-old Gavin, my name's Austin David. Thanks for listening to our ramblings on here on the Orlando Soccer Show. We'll be back hopefully in full force in the next few weeks with everybody from years past and present on the show. So thanks for listening, and bye.